The Business Simplicity Podcast, where leaders share their most successful strategies and the failures that inspired them, so business owners and managers can avoid the suffering and reap the benefits. With your host, Chris Parker.
And welcome back to the Business Simplicity Podcast. This is Chris Parker, and I'm having a conversation with Alpha Dubey, who I've known for quite a few years. We lost track for a while, but Alpha's one of the, I guess, the leading customer experience thinkers, in my definition, maybe even in the world, worked with Forrester. And now he's the dean of what they call the School of Great Moments, or the Customer Experience Leadership Institute, with Majid Al Futtaim, which is a giant holding company out of Dubai in real estate and malls. And I'm sure we might talk a bit about that. But what I love most about Alpha is he, I would call, is a CX realist. And the question that we want to wrestle with is how to make customer experience, customer centricity, passion real. You know, really land in an organization, as opposed to maybe what some organizations do is kind of the fluff and the tick the box and buying the tech only. So yeah, really curious how this goes. So Alpha, thank you. Can you kick us off with maybe just a little description about yourself and how do you describe what you do?
Yeah. So I think it's, in a way, I love your description. A CX realist is, I guess, my perspective on things and what I do. So I run an institute which is effectively designed to transform the mindset of the leadership management of a huge organization. So that's what we do. The idea and the attraction of that is when I think about CX in particular, but any transformation really, when I think about that transformation, you think there's the stuff that you can buy, you know, of that transformation. So that could be the strategy, the prioritization, technology for sure, and so on, even manpower. You can buy that stuff. And then you look at organizations, and in today's world in CX, many, in fact, most large organizations will have bought lots of CX-oriented stuff. And they have functions and sometimes chief customer officers. And quite clearly, I've spent a huge amount on technology. So think NPS systems and other kinds of things. And have functions with people. And so there's headcounts associated with it. You look at all those things, and then you look at those organizations. And many of them do much or many of the things that we CX practitioners would say an organization should be doing. They say the right things, and they, in fact, are investing in the things that we say they should be investing in. And then we look at some of those or many of those organizations and said, have they actually received the benefits that we talk about? Or do they have what we in CX say is the benefits of CX? And it's, relatively rare as a whole entire organization to say, point to the organization where the customer mindset or customer is truly in the DNA of that organization. I think it's rare to find. And when we spot those companies where it does exist, they stand out, and you go to any conference and you'll see the names of those companies coming in.
Do you have an example
the point of what I do?
Alpha, what is like an example of, you know, because you've had the opportunity to look globally for many years on this, like who would be the actual champions of really having this real CX DNA?
Who as in
companies,
the type of company?
Yeah.
Well, you can argue, I think everyone will have their own point of view about this, but at a certain point, people will tend to look at Apple, in particular around the Apple stores, as a kind of example. Some people will point out Amazon as a kind of example. And a few others, you might point to Disney in terms of amusement parks as a kind of example. Some of these hugely global. And there are other smaller players that in certain regions they might exist, or in industries that you kind of have to explain why they're doing something. So they're not immediately famous, but the regular ones that everybody would understand would be some of those, and a few others that I think everyone would go to any conference and see these examples pop up again and again and again. Not that they are perfect, but that they have something that's DNA about them. Mm-hmm. So the point, I think, of all of this is that when you look at what we are trying to do in the role that I have is trying to get to that mindset. So if you think about CX as having, there's a skill set or the stuff of CX. And I think many organizations have that, and they've invested quite heavily and frankly doing some of the right things. They're doing great stuff on that side. Well, when I look at the mindset stuff, some people call it the softer side of CX, but actually it's the hard side, because it's the part that gets people to care, believe in, and act on that stuff of CX. So if people don't actually care, believe in, and act on that stuff of CX, there's another word we can call that stuff, and it's called cost. It's a cost to the business. And unfortunately, what happens in many organizations is they invest, they do some of that stuff, and they give it a go without that part that I talked about, the care, the belief, and the act on, the mindset side. And what they will train themselves or teach themselves is that, you know, we've been investing in this stuff for, I don't know, X number of years. You know, what do we have to show for it? What does it look like for us? And then they start questioning the whole notion of CX. And for some people, that question is a very dangerous one. In terms of CX, at least. And so that's kind of where I think we are, and what I guess a focus in getting to what the CX really require. I think, yes, we've learned quite a lot about those tools, the stuff of CX, and we're now just getting into this mindset. And I think behavioral economics, from a customer point of view, is there. But there's another piece, which is, you know, we talk about employee experience, and it's how do you get an average employee to believe and actually care about CX, especially when their day job is not related or not directly customer facing, or closely connected to the end experience. And that's an interesting question.
So, so many thoughts. One thought is, haven't we been here before in a way? I mean, CRM, customer relationship management, back in the day, started as a movement to really invest in the human relationships with customers. And then that was sort of overtaken by technology and stuff. And then it never really had the payoff, and people weren't really investing in the work, and now it's gone. And, you know, it's now their ticketing systems, and it's, you know, so, you know, customer relationship is a thing. Yeah. It's gone. Is CX on the same sort of wave that, you know, that we're maybe going peak CX, and the techies have overtaken it, and this potentially incredibly valuable insight and business changing, you know, transformational energy is going to get washed away? You know, what do you think? Where are we going?
Yeah, I think we've exactly been there. As you rightly point out, CRM, strategic CRM, the early days of CRM, the idea of CRM is not that far off from what we're talking about with CX. Have a dialogue with your customer, have this one-to-one conversation with this customer. In order to have that one-to-one conversation, you have to remember what this customer has said. You have to kind of respond in an appropriate fashion to what, you know, if it's a conversation, it's not a yelling match, it's a conversation. And of course, we didn't know how to do that from a systemic point of view. Tech companies said, you know, in order to do that, you got to have some memory. You got to have some way of understanding what a customer wants and needs. So here's, buy this thing, this box of CRM. And companies were able to rationalize and to justify the thing that they were buying. We're buying this box of stuff. And they could put it in place, and that box of stuff actually works on paper, and the system itself worked. The problem with that box of stuff is, especially in the early days, you know, we weren't quite yet capturing all the data that we have now with digital in the digital world. But in the early days, you know, salespeople would have to input some information, and people would have to put some, you know, call center agent would have to input some information, and a call center agent would have to punch another button to retrieve the information at the right time. Well, those extra button pushes meant that people would have to do it. If people didn't do it or put in nonsense, it was going nowhere. And so effectively, you know, I wouldn't say it was completely ineffective, but the proverbial ROI was never really found, and we're still looking for it. And I think, yes, in CX, we're at risk, and frankly, it's happening, where number one, we have these systems, measurement systems are the big budget item in CX. And that will, if not happening right now, certainly it is happening. You know, AI, machine learning will take over as a way of addressing CX concerns at a cost-effective way. And, you know, we've gone through the chat bots and all the other things that are possible to do. And it'll sound very customer-oriented and all kinds of things. But effectively, these things are things that you can buy. What needs to happen is the mindset that sits behind these things. How do we judge these things? How do we assess these things? How do we know what we're actually trying to accomplish out of these things? It's not just efficiency that we're looking for in CX. It's not just, you know, first time resolution or whatever other kind of what I call them efficiency type metrics that we're looking for. There's an emotional connection that we're actually looking for that leads to the sacrificial loyalty, that leads to the lifetime value and all the rest of it. We're at risk.
Sorry, you said the E word, emotional. Mm-hmm. We're talking about business here. How can you bring the emotional word into business? Is that allowed?
Well, yes. And I think fortunately for us, we're starting to understand how to translate that word. So again, most people, they hear emotion, you know, happy, sad, pleased, frustrated, irritated. They kind of get that. Okay, we don't really need to have much of a new field to understand. We don't want to irritate and frustrate people. We want to make people happy and pleased. So we don't need that. But emotional engagement in terms of loyalty, I think if we speak in terms of true loyalty, then yes, we can talk about that. And if we talk about that in terms of what loyalty looks like, and for me, I call that sacrificial loyalty. I don't get it confused with tenure, and I don't get it confused with loyalty programs. We have a semantics issue that is actually a programmatic issue, but it's sacrificial loyalty that we should be actually looking for. And what do I mean by sacrificial loyalty? We want to develop experiences that gets customers to, and we engage with those customers and emotionally engage with them, and they emotionally engage with us to such a degree that they are happy and willing to sacrifice something in order to interact with us. That is loyalty. So if we, for a time being, are slightly higher than some competition in pricing, they still come to us. If we are slow to market with some new product or development, but the competition has it right now and the customers stick with us, not because the pain of getting the other one is too high, but because they just want to do it with us, that's what I'm talking about. And that sacrificial loyalty, we're kind of getting at how to get there. We're starting to get to understand how to measure it. It's not a survey question per se. It's something else that we can observe. And we can observe it because now through digital, we're able to see behaviors. We're understanding markers of what is sacrifice. And eventually, and this is some years away, but we're kind of getting there, we'll be able to do this neurologically. We'll understand what a sacrifice is in neurological terms and be able to measure that on the fly with customers. So that's where we're headed. If we can last long enough to get through this challenge, as you pointed out, that some of the other today's technology and other kinds of things don't overtake it. And then we have to call customer experience, just like we move from CRM to customer experience. And maybe we have to change the name from customer experience to whatever else just to differentiate between the technology of CX, which may take it over to the next phase. But yeah, that's a risk. It's a huge risk for us right now.
Well, and I'm wondering, how to actually create this mindset shift, but My belief is, and we talked about this a little bit before we press record, is either the executives get it or they don't, is my view. And if an executive, meaning a leader, it doesn't have to be there, maybe the top, but the influential leader that sets the tone in the organization, that if they really care about their customers, then that will already be alive in the organization somehow. And then if there's a leader that doesn't care or cares about other things, and then maybe hires a chief customer officer or some other sort of proxy for this, then that might be able to work. But I'm a bit pessimistic about that. But assuming that there is a legitimate interest from leadership to invest meaningfully in that DNA shift, how can an organization actually make that real instead of just buying the stuff and ticking the boxes? So like, how do you move the needle on that mindset, really, to shift people who are maybe ambivalent about customers to being more curious and caring?
Well, I think a couple of questions need to be answered. The type of investment that needs to be made, there needs to be a realization that part of that investment will have to be in leadership itself. So CX leadership. And CX leadership is not about the CX function and the CX team. It's about the CX injection into the leadership of the leadership layer of the organization. I don't just mean the exco layer. I mean, senior management across team leads, whatever it is, management of the organization. So there needs to be an investment, and that investment comes in the form of time. So, in the traditional view, it's always a good idea if senior leaders join and they spend some time in the old days, spend some time in the contact center, if they go out in sales calls so they spend some time. Not only up front in the honeymoon period, that first 3 months or whatever when they join, but every year, our senior leaders will spend a day or whatever. That was a traditional view, and it's still a great one. So number one, that doesn't happen almost often still. So that's obviously a clear marker. Even the old school, and I say old school, I mean, it's effective, but it's just a traditional point of view. The second point of view is when looking at what people do in their day jobs, that especially when those day jobs don't sound like customer anything. And I think I was just talking earlier, think about the procurement office or something, treasury or whatever. These people never talk to customers directly. The question comes, what is it that they actually need to know about CX? Clearly, I think in today's world, I don't think you'll find too many professionals who say, I don't believe in CX or CX is a waste of time. I don't think you'll find so many people saying those things. But if you look at their behavior, you can see something maybe very different, as we all know. But the question still is, so what is it that they need to do? And I think we've gotten to the point where we're thinking of CX and we're always thinking of that in experience. And if we think of CX, I mean, I'm talking inside an organization. If you think about that in experience, and you and your heart of hearts in your day job, you know that you're part of the value chain or the whatever other chain you want to call it. And yeah, your decisions eventually end up there, but you don't feel connected to that end thing. Your KPIs are, about saving money or whatever your KPIs are about. That's what you build spreadsheets all day long. That's what you do. And you enjoy it. You're good at it. You have all kinds of certifications and whatnot. That's what you do. You've been hired because you're the best at building those kinds of spreadsheets. And so the question that I always have is, as a CX practitioner, in all honesty, if I'm talking to these people, what beyond the fact that we're working on CX and they agree that we're working on CX and happy that we are working on CX, what do I want that individual to actually do? What would be different if that person didn't work on CX? And initially, it's a very difficult question, to be honest. It's not an easy question to come up with. I think the answer lies in how minute the micro behaviors we're talking about are, and this is where, you know, Jeff Bezos's red chair concept, it's not obviously the red chair itself, it's just the idea that in a regular meeting, if they really follow up on that red chair having some meaning, that they just question themselves around that customer perspective, whatever they're talking about. I think that's useful. So I think going back to your question, in order to make the shift, what has to happen is we have to, as CX practitioners, get better at answering the question, what are the micro behaviors that leaders all across have to display? What are those micro behaviors look like? And for me, I translate that into picture scenarios. In a team meeting, what is it that a leader would do? Doesn't matter your function. What is it that if you had a CX perspective, what would be a question that would you ask different questions? Is that something that you would do? And the answer is yes. You would ask not all different questions, but there would be some additional questions that you would ask consistently that would drive things forward. And in order for that to happen, when I think about top-down leadership, it would be, well, if the most senior people are sort of asking, again, Jeff Bezos, red chair, you're in the meeting with Jeff Bezos, red chair in this huge organization, and he's thinking customer, that will trickle down. Same thing with Steve Jobs. If you pick up, you know, that concept from Steve Jobs and others like them, if you pick up that concept from them, and you understand that if you take something to this person, and this could be any leader subordinate relationship in the organization, if you take something to this person, I'm very likely going to get this kind of question. I need to be prepared for this kind of question. As a starting point, that's really what's required in the DNA of the organization. Once you start asking better, you know, quote unquote CX questions, at first, you'll be pretty much crap at answering them because you're not used to answering them. It will take some time to be able to even get good at answering those questions. And then there's another phrase that says, another phase that says, phase one, we're starting to ask these questions. Your people aren't prepared. We don't have good answers. Phase two, we're starting to get good at answering those questions. Phase three, we're starting to pay attention to the answers we have to those questions. And in the mix, we have a financial perspective. We have a health and safety perspective. We have a, I don't know, operational something, something perspective. And we have a customer perspective. Now, I don't always expect that customer perspective to win in the discussion. I don't expect that. But I expect it to win sometimes. If we don't have that in the conversation, it will never win. And for me, when I think of DNA of an organization, it's that customer's perspective is there consistently in all those little micro meetings that's happening all across the business. And sometimes, different points, different times, and different meetings, different things, but sometimes consistently, you can make an argument that that customer's perspective is taking hold.
Is this where the chief customer officer can come in? Because those other themes, you know, financial, risk, operations, sales, they have a typically a human responsible for them that are championing that. Is this a healthy role for the chief customer officer to champion that perspective in these discussions and engage in those?
So I have a particular view. Yeah, I have a particular view on chief customer officer. I think yes, you're right. And I think they would say that's in fact what they do. My observation is that many times chief customer officers don't have any stick or carrot to work with. And so, you know, ultimately they need to be a good salesman. But if you think just logically, CX requires a business to do things differently. If you assume that they have a legacy and that legacy wasn't based on CX, then it requires you to do something differently, which will require some toe-stepping effectively. So you're doing it this way. It's not the right way for the CX perspective. I think that chief customer officer should, as you say, champion it. But I think it also requires a bit of some authority to toe step, or at least to bring that conversation to the fore. And again, I don't believe, as I said, I don't always believe that customer perspective should win in every instance. I think the chief customer officer has to understand that as well. And I think they do. But yes, they should champion that. And what I would be looking for, again, if I put it in very simple, I kind of try to put things into simple terms, because I'm not talking about the stuff of CX. It's not, I'm not now not talking about the strategy that we have for CX and what we're going to do in the next 5 years. I'm talking about, I'm looking at the, I don't know, chief sales officer, and I'm looking at how they put together their sales plans and whatever else that they're doing. And I'm listening, or the chief financial officer, looking at how budgets are looked at and rationalized. And I'm looking at the questions that have been asked that helps you formulate the assumptions that go into those budgets and other kinds of things. And if I do not see these questions being asked, or these questions being asked and being answered in some kind of cursory tick box sort of way, then yes, I need to be able to have some toe-stepping ability to call this out. And now it becomes an exco level, you know, how do we want to deal with this? Are we happy with this? Because if we're consistently happy with not asking these questions and not answering them and not taking those answers into consideration, then let's be real, we're not interested in CX. We have window dressing, we have a lot of stuff, we can invest. We can put it in the annual report. We can have our paragraph that says how much we've invested and how much we're doing. But the stuff that we talk about with CX, true sacrificial loyalty, won't result. And at some point, somebody in the organization will say, look, we've had this chief customer officer. You've been here how long? We do not see this stuff. Give me your ROI. And that's exactly what happened with CRM. Give me the ROI. What are you doing? Now, we have some allies and some things that are coming into play that helps us understand this from certain angles. And I think, as I call it, behavioral economics, for example, on the customer side of things, is the science of CX. And I think we're starting to apply didactic principles, whatever else, in terms of the learning that needs to go, or the education or the enlightenment that needs to go to help the average employee get CX, which I think they don't get right now. They really don't get what real CX is. You know, businesses have always had customers, and all businesses have always had experiences. So if you talk to the average employee, they would say, I know what it is, but they really don't. And secondly, once they get CX, to have some belief that it really does add to something that's beneficial to them, not just to the business, but to them. That is a jump that we haven't made, I don't believe, in general, in the world of CX.
And CX has been around as a term for probably, I don't know, 15, 20 years, and it's still evolving. So we're not done yet. And there's still a chance to make it real. And hopefully it doesn't go the way of CRM, but I have to ask a question, and I've sort of been doing background thinking. So, because you didn't quite answer the question on who do you think is doing it best? And so I'll rephrase the question. What brand in your personal life are you the most sacrificially loyal to, and why? Is that a fair question?
There isn't a brand that I am. I'm a bit jaded. I am not sacrificially loyal to any brand. In fact, I'm so jaded that I don't belong to, let me put it to you like this. I don't take any loyalty points. I don't belong to any loyalty programs. I mean, even for discount purposes, I don't belong to any. The only ones that I've ever belonged to when I was traveling quite a lot with consulting were the airline ones, because I wanted to use the airport lounge. Well, it was because I was using the airport lounge. I didn't fly a particular airline for any particular reason. I, in my personal life, do not have, at least in big major brands. There are brands that I have worked with that I like what they do. I like the ethos at the time that I was working with them, that they were really aiming for. And I say aiming for in particular, because if I look at them, have they done that? No, and that's okay for me. That's okay. A company doesn't have to reach the end game, but they have to be authentic in wanting to reach that end game. And there are some companies which have done that. And this is now going back a ways. But Handelsbanken is one that I don't know the current situation with them, but I've always appreciated some of the things that they were doing as an idea. And I think in order for that idea to even take hold, because when I look at experiences, I put on my like CX goggles, right? The CX goggles, can you see it from the customer's point of view, first lens, second lens? What do you think happened behind the scenes to make that come to life? And that's what I think. So Handelsbanken is one. And the story with them, I have no idea if they're still doing it or whatever, but at the time, they were the ones who, they didn't have credit. It's a bank. They don't have credit scores. So how do you give loans? How do you do the basic stuff of banking without a credit score? Well, they went kind of old school. And it's just like, the branch manager has to know the people in that branch. You come to that branch manager for a loan. That branch manager knows you. They know your situation. They know this, and they make a judgment call. And the headquarters is listening to that branch manager because they know the branch. They know what's happening with you and that. That is an interesting kind of concept because you think about where does trust have to be. All across all employees, everything in that entire business to be able to listen to. And again, I don't know the details of how that happened, but the idea that there was no credit score is phenomenal to me. And so when I think of examples like that, I think that's where I find things. I think it's not really a bells and whistles thing. As far as I know, I don't think they advertise, we don't have credit scores. That's not what, it's just that they didn't have them. And I think that's kind of the examples that I would give. There's some others that might stand out, but they're probably smaller businesses, not all digital, by the way, not digital native companies, but just smaller businesses in certain local markets that maybe people wouldn't know about that I think have that ethos. And I think to some degree, my business, we have that. It's a huge business, obviously, and pockets and all of that. But there are communities. We build communities as well. And if you look at some of the communities that we have, they have that ethos built into them.
You said you're jaded. I'm not sure if you remember this about me, but I've produced a couple of feature films, and having been through that process and understanding, from cradle to grave, which is a marathon. To get a feature film out, I realized that I watched movies differently, and it sort of destroyed the illusion, because I was watching. So I'm curious, as you being that CX realist and that CX practitioner, your whole incredible career, is that what has jaded you on it? Like, because you see through the fluff and you're like, yeah.
That's exactly it. I think anyone that, and for me, that's part of the DNA. This is a risk to companies, right? If you actually want this thing to be in the DNA, your people would develop what I'm calling CX goggles in your people. And once your people have these CX goggles, they start to see everything that's happening differently. And that is what spurs asking different questions and going a bit further than just whatever my functional, my part of the value chain is. So yes, I think in every CX practitioner, true CX practitioner sees things differently. They see you can probably in many instances tell the waiter does something brilliant. Is it the business or is it just that waiter? And you can, there's signs is given away. You can tell immediately what it is, whether it's John's experience or the business's experience. And I think we learn how to read those things, and we see opportunities that could have been that didn't happen. So when you see all of those things, or you see companies saying these things, and then you just look, evidence of all the things that's not happening. Now, again, big businesses are huge. I don't expect all businesses to do everything. But when you're a CX practitioner, you expect to see, okay, they made that decision because they had to, they need to save money, they need to cut costs, they need to do whatever. Got it. That's not a problem. But if that's all that you see, in that process, then you immediately understand what is real, what is fluff or play or whatever you want to call it.
Cool. Well, the invitation for everyone listening is, you know, check in and invest time in understanding for your company what does CX goggles mean for you, you know, and how do you pay attention to those small details and build it in the DNA. So Alpha Debate, thank you so much. I will include on the show notes. This has been awesome, you know, because you were kind enough to perform at I think Sex on the Beach, at least CX on the Beach, customer experience leadership event we were doing in the Netherlands. It's great to reconnect. Thank you for this. And people can find you on LinkedIn. I'll put your link in the show notes so people can get out there. And then, this is awesome. Thank you so much. As always, inspirational.
All right, thank you.
Thank you for listening. Download the Simplicity Toolkit from ebullience.com to discover the power of the Simplicity Scan and Sprint. Don't forget to like and subscribe to the podcast on your favorite player.